Welcome to the Rush Valley Podcast, where we talk about all things outdoors and hopefully some badass stories. What's up, guys? It's Anders Launce, your host, and today we will be talking with Danny Frazier. Danny had some recent success on some public land in North Dakota that we want to talk about. I also got a bunch of other shit I want to talk about with Danny, so welcome to the show, Danny. What's up, man?
Hey, what's up, dude? Thank you so much for having me on here.
Yeah, no problem. How you doing?
Yeah. Oh, I'm doing good, dude. Everything's going good. Just been busy working, and whenever I get off work, I always get in the woods when I get a chance.
For sure. Why don't you introduce yourself to everyone?
So my name's Danny Frazier, and I'm originally from New England. I grew up in a small town called Bellingham, Massachusetts. It's like an hour outside of Boston, just a small suburb town. And, I grew up doing a lot of deer hunting and a lot of turkey hunting. And I went to community college in Community College of Rhode Island. And I knew I wanted to get out of New England, so I went to college in South Dakota State University. And I moved out to South Dakota, and I love it out there so much. And that's how I ended up meeting you, Anders. I met you in college. At the time, we had the same major.
Yeah.
And I haven't left since. So, yeah.
So, you kind of got to explain to everyone you used to be a Packer fan, but now you're kind of you're a bandwagoner now, back to the Patriots.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, growing up as a kid, I really enjoyed watching Brett Favre play. I was a huge fan of Brett Favre, and I was fortunate. I got to see Brett Favre play when he was a Minnesota Viking. And he played the Packers on Monday Night Football.
How was that being fortunate?
I felt so lucky being able to go to that game, because I felt like it was definitely a historic game. And yeah. He was the first quarterback to beat all 32 teams that game too. So it was a pretty cool event to be at. And I was lucky. My dad got me second row tickets, and it was my first NFL football game I ever been to. So I felt really spoiled to be in the second row.
Yeah.
You know, typically your first game, you're usually in the nosebleeds. So yeah.
No, that's cool. The reason I kind of wanted to talk was, I know you're from Massachusetts, and most of the people that listen to this, I mean, before I met you, I didn't even know you could even hunt out there. So why don't you kind of explain, what it's like to hunt out there, or even explain kind of how you got into hunting first. Why don't you do that?
Well, the only reason I got into hunting is my dad hunted. And when I was young enough, he was taking me hunting with him. And my first passion was archery deer hunting, and it's still my passion. Mm-hmm. And I started archery deer hunting when I was 15. And that's the earliest age you can hunt by yourself in Massachusetts. And, hunting Massachusetts, it's a lot of fun. I have some amazing memories there. I mean, they're all great memories, but it definitely sucks compared to hunting in the Midwest. I mean, like, it definitely doesn't even compare. Like, it can be pretty difficult finding places to hunt in Massachusetts, because, there's a lot of deer. We have a high volume of deer, so they're giving out a lot of tags. But the biggest problem is access. I don't even know what the population of Massachusetts is, but I think there's like over like 8 million people in Boston alone. Mm-hmm. And never mind the rest of the state. So when you're finding places to hunt, you're dealing with homeowners, you're dealing with neighborhoods, you're dealing with, if you shoot a deer, it might die in someone's yard. So you're going to have to deal with a random person. And there's a lot of tree huggers back home. There's a lot of liberals, a lot of people that, hate hunters, and it's definitely, it can be a headache sometimes, and even asking for permission on spots, you definitely get way more no's than yeses. But but I have one of my good friends, James, he has the best luck asking permission.
Yeah.
It's it's kind of hit or miss, but it's just, I don't know, I enjoy the hunting in the Midwest way better. But it seems like back home you're hunting behind a Walmart or a Dunkin' Donuts, or it's pretty common to sit up in a tree stand back home and you can hear traffic go by, and you can hear a nature walker, you can hear a stay-at-home mom walking their dog in the woods. It seems like you're dealing with people and the wildlife sometimes when you're hunting back home. So that's why I like it out here better.
Yeah. Well, if you weren't so ugly, you'd probably get a little more success asking for permission.
Oh, thanks, man. I didn't really ask permission that much when I grew up hunting. There was a little bit of public land where I grew up. There was some Army Corps land that you could hunt, and then there was some town land which was legal to hunt.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, hunting in Massachusetts, it's just pretty difficult because it's not like, states in the Midwest, you read the regulations for the hunting and, you know exactly where you can and cannot hunt. Whereas back home, every town has their own bylaws for hunting.
Okay.
So there's a town 25 minutes from where I grew up. It's called Westwood, and it's technically illegal to hunt in that town. Like, their bylaws say you can hunt, but unless you're on private land with permission. But it's just a really rich and wealthy town. Like, you can't just drive to Westwood and find a big piece of Forest Service land. Or it's just there isn't a lot of opportunity or access. You'd have to find the right landowner and a lot of times when you're asking for permission, you're only getting permission on anywhere from 7 to 10 acres. I mean, sometimes you could get lucky and find more, but there's just a lot of just landowners. It's not like in Wisconsin where it's pretty cut and dry, where you have somebody who owns 40 acres, 100 acres, and just gets pretty confusing back home.
So you're saying there's really not that much public land to kind of hunt around your home?
Yeah, I grew up in South Central Massachusetts, so there wasn't really that much public land. There's a couple places, there's State Forest, and there's the little Army Corps. And then if you go out in Western Massachusetts, there's definitely a lot more, wildlife management areas that you can hunt. But yeah, it's not the same. I like it way better out here,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it can just get confusing. And then I just hate dealing with people when I'm hunting. There's been plenty of times where I've gone hunting back home in Massachusetts, and you bump into the wrong dog walker, and they just chew your ass while you're hunting, questioning you and saying you're not allowed to hunt here. And it's just, the people in the Midwest are just so much more friendly. Usually, if you're hunting in the Midwest, someone will be like, "Oh, did you see anything? Did you shoot anything?" They're definitely interested in what you're doing.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say our nickname in Massachusetts, people call us massholes. That's our nickname. There's a lot of friendly people back home. I don't want to be telling people that everyone from Massachusetts is unfriendly, but
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say there's definitely a lot of road rage back home, but there's a lot of friendly people back home, and I still stay in touch with family and friends back home. And
No, the further you go, the bigger assholes they get. I'd say New Jersey. I got a roommate that's from New Jersey. His name's Joe. And
oh yeah,
he's a prick. When he drives in Wisconsin, I feel bad for the people because he's getting in everyone's way. He pulls out in front of them. It's like everyone else is on their time.
Mm-hmm. I met Joe, right?
Yeah, I think so.
He's an extremely nice guy.
No, he is.
He's the one who found his first shed this year, right?
Yeah, being from New Jersey, never hunting in his life, we took him out. We just said, "You walk. We're gonna go shed hunting." And we caught up with him later in that day, and he's like, "I found two of them." I was like, "Good for you. Keep looking." What I kind of want to talk about too a little bit is when you did move to South Dakota, were you lost?
Oh yeah, I was totally lost because, like, where I grew up, when people give directions, it's typically like they tell you what town to go to or like what highway to be on, or like they just say like, you meet me near the Home Depot and you'll drive by the 5 Dunkin' Donuts, and like you say, you meet them on a specific street. Whereas like I wasn't used to the grid layer system roads in South Dakota, and people would just give you like, drive northeast of this street, 276 street. And like everything was just numbers and, northeast, all those directions. And, people from the Midwest probably think I sound dumb right now, but just like growing up in a place where like all the roads I drove back home, they're all fully forested and the roads wind and turn. And there's just a lot of like, there's no grid layer roads back home. It was definitely, a little difficult, but I certainly got used to it. And I definitely got used to driving on gravel. I remember I was a little tentative driving on gravel for the first time, but it's easy to do that now. And it's definitely, I enjoy driving out here so much more than back home.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Go ahead.
And one of the first things I said when I flew into Sioux Falls, I was like, "Where'd all the trees go?" There's no trees. I wasn't used to the wide open country.
Yeah.
But
I mean, that's even different than from where we're at in Wisconsin. So just kind of talk about, when you started hunting out there. I know when I moved from my hometown to like a different area, I was kind of nervous to just go out and hunt because it was like, I don't know this spot. I don't know people around here. I couldn't imagine moving across the country 17 hours or whatever it is. When did you kind of start hunting in South Dakota? Did you go right away or did you kind of find some buddies and ask them, where some good spots were, or what did you do?
Well, my first college year in South Dakota, I actually didn't hunt because I had to fly out here. I didn't have a vehicle out here yet, so I didn't have any of my hunting stuff with me. And living in South Dakota for a year, I was working a lot and I was focusing on school. But being here for a year and not hunting, like that was just killing me. I'm like, I got to get my bow here. I got to start hunting.
Yeah.
I was going kind of stir crazy, not hunting, seeing every.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and no, you go ahead. I'm good.
So then second year you kind of started hunting.
Yeah, second year I started bow hunting, and I was really lucky enough to get private land by Brookings to hunt.
Yeah,
I was hunting 200 acres of private land, and there wasn't many trees on the property where I was hunting. It was just the Big Sioux River went through the property I was hunting.
Yep.
And it was just a big cattail slough river. And there was a lot of deer on the property I was hunting. But hunting there I was able to hunt there for 2 years while I was in school. And I only shot 3 does on that property. And I saw a lot of bucks, but I just couldn't cut the distance. Like a lot of times where I saw the bucks, they'd just be by the cattails where you couldn't hang a tree stand. And is definitely difficult hunting, you know, trying to kill a deer in wide open country. I wasn't used to it.
Yeah, and, I can imagine.
But, you know, hunting that 200 acres definitely made me into a better hunter because I learned so many mistakes, you know, just messing up, pushing bucks, you know, while they're bedded down. I just learned so much from that area, and it was definitely, you know, worth it. And that was a cool area too, because there are certain areas on the property you couldn't get there unless you canoed there.
Okay.
So I bought a cheap canoe on Craigslist, and I would canoe to a lot of my spots there. And the canoe is actually still on that guy's property. I got to go get that canoe someday. I currently drive a Honda CRV, so I can't really put the canoe on there.
Shaft that fucker to the top.
Yeah, it's a 17-foot canoe. It's a pretty big canoe. I don't know if it would be on there very steady, but I had to borrow a friend's truck to bring that canoe to that property. Okay. And, like, yeah, the first thing I said is, like, I'm just keeping this here because I'm not going to take it anywhere else. So,
mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's just a cheap canoe. I don't know. I'm sure it's still there. You know, no one would steal it. It's on private land. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
So that was, I mean, South Dakota split up into what they call, like, East River and West River.
Yep.
So you hunted East River, which when I went to, we both went to school at South Dakota State. But when I went there, it was, not to say it sucked because there was some good areas, but like it was tough. It was tough for me too. Cause when I went out there, I said the same thing. Like, where do you hang a tree stand here? So when I went out hunting with a couple of buddies from the wrestling team there, It was hard, yeah. Like, it was wide open field, cattails, and in those cattails mm-hmm. is where a lot of the big bucks were. So
you kind of
had some opportunities to go hunting West River as well, too, right?
Yep, yeah, I've hunted West River and East River, and both the areas are just pretty different dramatically. Where, you know, East River, it's mainly just, you know, agriculture land, grid layer setup. And shelter belts, really flat. And then once you get to Chamberlain, once you get to the river, like the land just changes dramatically. And you can do spot and stock hunting along the river. You can set up tree stands. You can do all sorts of different hunting there. And then I've also hunted western South Dakota in the Black Hills National Forest. I killed a public land buck in the Black Hills last year. It wasn't a giant by no means, but it still got me really excited, and I shot that out of a ground blind. But
yeah, you can tell that story. You've told me the story, but it's a cool story. Tell it.
Yeah, I was just hunting in a ground blind, and it was I killed the buck. It was like November 7th, so it was definitely the heat of the rut, and I had a lot of action. I had a lot of deer coming around me, and I just try to set up in a good, you know, travel pinch point. And I shot that buck. And, you know, it was the first time I used a grizzly stick broadhead. And, you know, I heard the deer crash and, you know, heard it crash and fall. And there wasn't a lot of blood initially because it was kind of a funky shot. I shot behind the shoulder and then I hit the opposite shoulder, and I had the nocturnals, so when the arrow hit the deer, I saw the arrow stay in the deer, and it ran with my arrow. And it took us a little while to find the deer, but it was only about 80 yards from my blind. But we found it, and, like, all the blood was internal. It was just kind of a funky situation, but I was just happy I found the deer.
Yeah. Who were you with on that one?
I was hunting with my buddy, Nate Doubles.
Nate, yeah. Maybe someday I'll have to get Nate on here.
Yeah, Nate's a cool dude. He's fun to hunt with.
Yeah. You guys did some duck hunting too out there, right?
Yeah, Nate's an excellent duck hunter. We'll do duck hunting and stuff, and we hunted muleys, you know, we hunted a small town called Pedro, South Dakota, and it was just a ghost town. Nobody lived there. And it was just like really bluffy country with a lot of trees and valleys. And that was the first time we ever hunted mule deer. And dude, mule deer hunting is really hard. I didn't realize how smart they are. Like, you know, growing up on the East Coast, we kind of view mule deer as stupid. Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't believe, like, we're 400 yards from four mule deer does, and we're on top of a ridge, and those does are looking straight up at us at that ridge. And I'm like, how the hell do they see us?
Yeah.
And like, man, but I've never shot a mule deer yet, but I definitely want to someday.
Yeah. No, yeah, that'd be cool out there too.
Well, the Black Hills is a cool place, man. I mean, you've gone on trout trips there, so I know you know what it's like.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's weird, too, because it's a lot of, like, I mean, obviously it's different from eastern South Dakota, but there's a lot, I mean, it's rolling hills and, like, mountains,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of, like, pine trees and stuff. So it's definitely a more difficult area. So the fact that you did kill a deer there is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, it's, man, South Dakota, man, and North Dakota, it's totally a hidden gem. Like, I'm just really surprised that, like there's so many different ecosystems you can hunt in South Dakota. Like, you got the East River, you got the ag land, and you got, you know, the river breaks in the central state, you got Black Hills, you know, and then even in northeast South Dakota, there's a place called Sechi Hollow, and it's pretty much 1,000 acres of an oak forest. So, I mean, you can hunt, like, that reminds me of hunting, like, back in Rhode Island in Massachusetts, hunting that timber hunting.
Yeah.
So there's more than cornfields in South Dakota. So I feel like that's what a lot of people think it is.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah.
No, that's... It's pretty cool that you kind of ended up out in South Dakota. Do you think you'll ever go back to the East Coast?
Fuck no. I'll never go back. There's no way. I love New England. It's a beautiful area, and I miss my friends and family there, but if they want to see me bad, they can come visit me out here. It's just I just love the pace of life in the Midwest. It's just a lot slower. The Midwest, it just offers way more for hunting and fishing than, you know, New England ever will. Like, there is a lot of outdoor activities to do in New England, but there's just way more stuff to hunt out here. And there's just a lot more stuff to look forward to. And then there's certain things, like, I do miss saltwater fishing.
Yeah.
You know, but if I could, like, I say this to my brother, if I could pick, you know, a Midwest whitetail, like a Midwest whitetail buck, or a, you know, a couple, you know, 40 inch stripers, I'd have to choose the big whitetail buck over the striper. Cause I mean, I could go anytime to Massachusetts and catch stripers, but to be able to, you know, to be able to live in the Midwest and hunt out here and spend all the time just hunting deer and watching deer. Like, I see way more deer hunting out here than I do in Mass. Like, it's like in Massachusetts, you're lucky to see one or two bucks all season.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like when you hunt in the Midwest, depending where you're at, you can see, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 bucks in one sitting, you know? Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, you said that the other day.
Yeah, like, it's, you just see so many deer, and it's, and just the quality of hunting out here is just way better. I mean, mm-hmm. there'll be times when I hunt in Massachusetts where, like, I might sit in the stand for 10 times in a row and I might not see one deer. Like, it's really difficult to hunt back home. It's just heavily timbered, and I mean, if you're not in, like, you definitely can be frustrating when you're not seeing deer, but I won't move. To answer your question, I won't move back there.
Well, so I mean, we've argued about this before. Striper fishing back home is different than striper fishing or striped bass in the Midwest here. Explain to people what striper fishing is, like how you do it and what the hype is kind of about.
Well, for starters, I mean, it's two totally different species because you got, you know, you have the white bass, you know, that's in the Midwest. And then on the East Coast, you have striped bass, you know, we call them stripers. And then I think in Nebraska, they have wipers. It's like a striped bass, white bass hybrid. I think they have those.
Yeah.
What I mean, striper fishing or a striper, it's just a really unique fish, man. They're born in freshwater. You know, when it comes to striper fishing, it's all about water temperature. Cause like during the winter time, there's no stripers in New England. You know, there could be a few holdovers, but no one's fishing for them.
Yeah.
And like they go down south, you know, they go on the freshwater rivers down south and they lay their eggs. And then they leave those freshwater rivers and they go in the ocean and they come up to the Northeast and they just get huge, eating mackerel, peanut bunker, all the bait fish. They just have my brother, he's caught some really nice stripers this year. Mm-hmm. And other family friends. And I mean, when the bite's on, it's pretty common to catch 40-inch stripers. So, I mean, the big difference is the size. I mean, they get huge. And one of my good buddies, I wrestled with him, and I would hunt with him back home. His name's Josh Regged, and he hit a personal record that I don't know if he'll ever beat, but he caught a 50-pound striper. Like, it was just a fish of a lifetime. I mean, I don't know if he'll... You know, it's pretty common to catch 40-inch striper. I mean, when the bite's on, you can catch those. But to catch to be in the 50-pound club, it's pretty hard. I mean, he put so much time into striper fishing.
Yeah.
Like that, he'll, you know, that dude will work all week, and he goes to the canal every weekend. So, I mean, I know he was bound to catch one, you know, with all the time he puts in. But that's definitely a once-in-a-lifetime fish.
No, that's...
You know, maybe... Yeah, he might beat it. But,
no, that's yeah, badass. I
really want to take you to the Cape Cod Canal. And
I know, we I have really to do that.
Yeah, I need to time it right, man, because it's like striper fishing can be really exciting, you know, when, like, they're blitzing. Like, I sent you that video where they're jumping out of the water and, mm-hmm. you know, it's shoulder-to-shoulder casting and, it's like an orchestra. Everyone's using lures and everyone's like trying to cast like up, you know, up current. So at the time when you're reeling your lure in, you know, the lure's in front of you. And by the time you're done, it's, you know, it's in, so you're not crossing line. But there's always assholes. We call these guys the bucket brigade. They're chunkers and they use chunk bait and they use like a 20-ounce weight and they throw a big chunk weight out, a chunk bait out. And they're, you know, yeah, a chunk bait, like just a, they take a, you buy a frozen pogey from the bait shop and you cut it in half and it's going to thaw out while you're fishing. Okay. And then those guys, when everyone's using lures, their setups are anywhere from $400 to $1,000 setups.
Yeah.
And the guys using chunk bait are using like Walmart special poles, like $50 setups.
Dollar store.
$50-pound monofilament. And then they cast the big ass weight and they're crossing everybody. And then you start to hear the Massachusetts accents coming out. Like, people are just swearing at each other. It's fun to watch. It's fun to watch, but...
And then the ladies go driving by on their bike.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, too. There's the Cape Cod Canal, there's just a lot going on. Like, you have the fishermen, you got civilians walking their dog, you got Lance Armstrong's riding their speed bikes. They get mad when you get it. They get mad when you get in their way.
Yeah.
Like they'll scream when they're going by you and they're like, on your left. It's just and there was There was a time my brother, he drove by one of the speed bikers and he was like slowing down and my brother pedaled fast next to the guy and he's like, on your left. And then he went past him just to piss him off. But yeah, so it's in the food choices, you know, by the canal is really good. Like you can buy the best lobster and it's, you'd have a really good time, man. You could definitely see some touristy stuff. And my brother started shark fishing, and it would be cool to take your shark fishing too. He's been catching big brown sharks.
I'd love by, to. Yeah, that'd be sweet.
Yeah, he my brother, he hasn't been striper fishing at all. He's just been in shark fishing mode. He said they fight way harder than a striper does. So
yeah. No, I definitely, yeah, that'd be cool. I definitely want to get out there and. We talked about doing a sea duck hunt too, which is also kind of interesting. You know, people only think about, I mean, not everyone, but you know, there's good, sea ducks and whatnot on the ocean. Yeah, you talked about you had a buddy that does that.
Yeah. I have a buddy who he's big into the sea duck. So we could get something lined up. And I know my buddy Nate is really interested too. And that would be an awesome trip to do that. And that's definitely something we'd probably, yeah, we'd have to have my buddy take us out. Cause I mean, he's got the full, like the saltwater boat and everything. And like, it's, yeah, I've never done any. Yeah. Like yeah. They got some awesome trophy ducks. And I didn't really learn about those trophy ducks until, I went to college when I took a class called Waterfowl Ecology Management. We learned about all the eiders and stuff, all those, you know, those sexy ducks that all the snob duck hunters want to shoot and get mounted, you know. So yeah. They're like the trophy ducks, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I'm just saying snob, just the bus balls. I'm not making fun of them.
No, they're the preppy people wearing Sitka.
Yeah, Sitka, you know. Yeah, Dude, I still haven't got myself to buy Sitka. I don't think. I mean, nothing against people who wear a Sitka, but it's everyone wears it.
Yeah.
But yeah. I heard they make really good bibs though for like extremely cold weather hunts.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't mind buying those down the road, you know, for those cold hunts.
For sure. Yeah. But it's a down payment on a car, so it's like.
Yeah. How do you like your new camo you're wearing?
First Light?
Yeah.
I like it. I mean, I just have the early season stuff so far. You know, I wore it turkey hunting last spring and I wore it bow hunting this fall. And it's been good. I don't know. I like it. I bet some of their warmer stuff is badass. But that's also. Mm-hmm. It's also more expensive, or just as expensive, and I don't have that money.
Yeah.
But
well, I could hook you up.
Yeah.
Get a discount.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah.
Well, with that being said, I want you to hear discount. Talk about your, you know, your work, kind of. I mean, you went to school for... law enforcement or whatever. What was it?
I graduated with a bachelor degree in natural resource law enforcement.
Yep. So
it's pretty much a wildlife and fisheries degree, but I took, you know, some law enforcement classes but I took a lot of wildlife and fishery classes.
Yeah. So, you kind of wanted to be a game warden. That really didn't, you know, that didn't work out. Whatever. And now you kind of found a job that you really like.
Yeah, like, the original plan was to be a game warden and, you know, working a couple years in law enforcement. I worked 2 years in corrections while I was in college and I did some game warden internships. And I thought that's all I wanted to do. But, you know, the more I did it, it's definitely not exactly what I want to do. And I definitely enjoy hunting, you know, more than checking people hunting, you know.
Yep.
And I wanted to find a job where I could, you know, just work a lot of hours, and then when I'm off, and I can go enjoy hunting, you know, and I can afford some nice hunting gear. And I currently work for the federal government with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and I'm a wildland firefighter. And okay. I really enjoy the job. It's pretty cool. And I'm up in North Dakota right now, so it's some awesome country.
Yeah, and you live kind of on a wildlife refuge.
I live on a wildlife refuge, and it's 58,000 acres of public land. So it's just a really dope place to live. And it's a seasonal job, so I'm going to be done here in around November. So I'm looking for some more fire jobs. And I definitely like how fire jobs are laid out, because, I mean, you're working really hard for 6 to 8 months, and you make a good chunk of change in that time, and then you get done working right around the rut. So it works out. So yeah, it's a sweet gig. And
what, so that public land, you know, you can deer hunt it, you can bow, or you get one tag a year for any deer, but kind of, mm-hmm. You know, you kind of said that you can't, you know, you can't like varmint hunt, you can't shed hunt, you can duck hunt in certain spots. What are kind of like the rules on a refuge like that?
Well, so I work on Jay Clark Salyer National Wildlife Refuge, and it's owned by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And so they're, you know, they're biologists, like they make the rules and regulations. And
okay.
I actually asked one of the biologists, you know, why can't you hunt coyotes here? He's like, you know, I told him I had one come under my stand, and I showed him the footage of it, and he's like, well, you can't hunt coyotes because, you know, our agency, like, you know, they really want to promote, like, you know, ducks and pheasants, you know, and like upland bird, migratory birds, ducks, waterfowl. And they said, when you have a lot of coyotes, they're going to kick out the red foxes. Mm-hmm. And the red foxes, you know, they can kill a lot of nesting birds and stuff. A lot of their nests go in their nest and destroy, you know, ducks and stuff. So that's why you can't hunt coyotes on this particular property. I suppose it's working, man. I see all sorts of ducks and geese and shore birds, and you see all sorts of stuff. And
yeah,
that's a. So, like, yeah, a lot of my friends, like you know, they're just like, why can't you hunt coyotes? What the hell? But there's plenty of private land, you know, adjacent to the refuge, like ag fields. And you could definitely get private land permission and hunt on private land and just call a coyote straight over. And
yeah,
I hear the coyotes here every day, mm-hmm. every evening you hear them. Every morning you hear them. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and you're not that far from Canada too, so there's a lot of different kind of ducks and geese and whatnot.
Yeah, I'm 23 miles from Canada where the crow flies. Huh. So,
yeah, because you said you saw some elk and moose while you're bow hunting too.
Yeah, this refuge is just and it's just a beautiful place, and it's definitely one of the most diverse refuges in North Dakota. You know, they got, like you said, they got moose and they got elk. The elk population here is really unique because it's a natural elk population. A little to the north of us, there's the Turtle Mountains, okay. And it's right next to Canada, and there's elk naturally there. And some of the elk herd migrated to the refuge, and they've made a established population on the refuge. So, like, these elk are wild. I mean, they're not, like, it's not like if you drive into Yellowstone and you're right next to the elk by the road. Like, these are wild elk, and you don't see them that often. I mean, they're out in the timber. There's a lot of aspen timber here, so they hide really well. And while I'm deer hunting, I see the elk trails all the time. You know, you can see the elk shit on the ground. You can see the beaten trails. You can see some rubs. It's I've only seen the elk herd 3 times since I've been here. So there was one time I was able to use my Canon DSLR camera, and I got some really good photos of the elk and stuff, so that was cool. Some of them still were holding up their antlers, and you can see some. You can see some of them; their antlers were half off, and that was March 31st. So it was pretty wild. They were still holding that time of year,
for sure. So, you've been hunting kind of a little bit this fall. You had work, obviously. You were stationed out in Idaho or Montana a few times. And you finally got out this past weekend, was it? It was a couple of days ago. That's when you shot that buck that I had posted. You can kind of, why don't you tell kind of how that went down?
So a few days prior to sitting in the tree I picked, like I was just hunting from the ground, and I saw a bunch of these deer, you know, go to this tree grove. And it's like a box elder. It's like a few box elders and a few cottonwoods. And there's not many trees, but you know, I would see the deer come right out of the Phragmites grass and the cattails and go past those trees. And, you know, they're just staging in the field. So I'm like, man, I need to sit in one of those trees one night. So on Sunday, you know, I decided to, you know, go out. I went out around 3:30, and you know, sunset was at about 8:05. So I wanted to get out there really early, because you know I'm bringing my mobile setup on my back, and some, you know, I'm new to setting up the climbing sticks and the tree stand. So it takes me about like an hour to get fully set up, because like I not only set up the sticks and the tree stand, but I set up my camera arm and I set up all my gear, so it's ready to go. So it takes me a while. So I wanted to get there really early. Yeah, that was definitely the best sit I've ever had in my life. Like, I just saw so much wildlife. Like, there is like, I'm not even exaggerating, there's thousands of sandhills in a really big field. And it was fun watching the sandhills. And then, you know, once it was, you know, getting a little later, like the last 2 hours of the day, the deer were starting to come out of the cattails, starting to come out of the Phragmites. And they were just starting to stage in the field. And I knew I was in a really good spot. And I can only hunt this spot on a north wind. And there was a northeast wind is ideal. And I wasn't even going to hunt on that day. And I was thinking of just staying back and not hunting, but I was checking my weather app, and I'm like, I got to get out there. I got to go hunting. And I got some awesome footage of deer, got some great footage of a coyote that came under my tree. I saw the buck. It's like 10 minutes left of daylight. And like the last 10 minutes of daylight, like the legal shooting hours, like deer after deer were just coming out of the cattails. They were just coming out, and there was a bunch of deer staged in the field, and everything is just working out perfect. And with like 5 minutes left of legal shooting light left, you know, I saw the buck, you know, come out, and I just reacted. I didn't have time to film. I just grabbed my bow, and it came 20 yards to the base of my tree. And I pulled back and I aimed right behind the shoulder, and I let an arrow fly, and my arrow did a full pass through. And when I saw my arrow go through the deer, the deer did a big mule kick, and I knew it absorbed all the energy from my arrow. And I heard it run, and I actually heard it crash, and I heard it coughing. So it didn't sound that far from the base of my tree. So, I was waiting a little while, and I climbed down my tree, and then at this time it's pitch dark, and I walked up to my arrow, and my arrow is fully buried in the ground. Like, I had to pull it out of the dirt, and there's blood all over it, and it looked like really good blood too. And I called up two of my coworkers, and I'm like, hey, I just shot a deer. I don't know how well I hit him, but I knew I hit him pretty good. I'm going to need some help looking for it. And so my two coworkers came and met me at where I was parking, and You know, so I waited an hour before I looked for the deer. And so in that time, I took down my tree stand and I took down all my camera gear, took everything down, and I packed it back to my vehicle. And I was hunting about like a half mile in, so I was a good ways in there. But after that, we looked for the, I left my arrow where the point of impact was. Mm-hmm. And we started there, and at the point of impact, there was like no blood, but the arrow is all bloody. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, what's going on? There's no blood here. You know, I was getting more discouraged. I'm like, man, I hope I didn't do a bad shot. Like, I'm fairly confident. Like, I remember calling you after the shot. I'm like, dude, I don't know what happened, man.
I've gotten those calls from you before.
Yeah, a lot of those calls.
Oh, fuck, I shot something bad.
Yeah. any bow hunter knows, yeah. I mean, the anticipation of like shooting the deer and then waiting to look for it, and especially when it's dark out, like you're just waiting and if I don't see it go down, I usually like to wait at least an hour just to make sure it's dead. You know, you don't want to bump it. And if you know you made a really bad shot, like in the liver, you definitely want to wait longer. That's just my personal opinion.
Oh, but for sure.
Anyway, so we probably waited like an hour, and we're looking at point of impact. Don't see any blood. And then I'm looking everywhere for blood. And then one of my coworkers, he's like, it's right here. And the deer went 15 yards from where the arrow was. It was in that tall Phragmites grass, so it was just hard to see it, and it was dark out.
Yeah.
And the deer didn't go far at all. And my arrow setup totally fucked it up. So
let's hear your rant about your arrow setup. You know, why don't you tell everyone? Because I know you want it. You've been waiting to tell this story.
Yeah. Well, anyone who shoots a new arrow system and then they have success with it, the first deer they shoot, of course they're going to be excited. And I'm shooting the Grizzly Stick Momentum TDT arrow,
yep,
with a Silver Flame XXL broadhead, and my total arrow weight is 650 grains.
Yeah.
And it's an awesome setup. Yeah. I love it.
Well, that has some knockdown power.
Oh yeah.
And
I don't know.
You should try and shoot a turkey with that.
Oh yeah, I definitely want to shoot a turkey with it. And I'd like to shoot more deer with it too.
Yeah, how many tags do you have left this year?
I have 6 tags.
Jesus. Save some for the rest of us.
I got a full dance card this year.
Where are you going?
So I have my North Dakota tag. And I'm down in North Dakota. You can only get one tag here as a non-resident for archery. And I have 6 tags in South Dakota. I have 3 archery tags, and I have 2 rifle tags for whitetail deer. And then I have a cow elk tag in the Black Hills.
Oh, that's right. And
that's a late season cow elk hunt. So
when does that start? Like,
I believe December 17th to December 31st. It's a late season hunt.
Is that like guaranteed elk or what?
Well, if you're hunting with me, probably not. But I don't know. I'm not too familiar with elk hunting in the hills, and I've known a few people who've hunted elk in the hills, and you know, I've heard some success stories, and I've heard of not so much success stories. And it definitely helps if you know people out there, you know, that are watching these elk all the time, and they can kind of point you in the right direction. That helps a lot. And I have a friend in college. His name's Josh Hurdle, really good guy. And he's from Sturgis, South Dakota. He's from the Black Hills, and he's got a few Black Hills elk under his belt. And he's just super nice guy. He said he's going to try to help me kill one. he said I can use his side by side, you know, to help drag it out and stuff. So it'll be nice to have him to kind of help me out where to go. Cause yeah, I don't know anything about elk hunting. Like I bought a bugle tube and I just wanted to buy that. Where I live, it'd be cool to try to practice calling elk in, you know, but I don't know if the bugle tube would even be come in handy late season. Cause
no, not to call in, probably a cow.
Yeah, probably not. But I just bought it because it was just cool to practice with. And I definitely want to hunt elk more.
Yeah.
You know, kind of in the same boat as you. Like, I want to hunt out far out west and hunt elk and stuff. So I'll definitely use it someday.
For sure. You're going to have, if you shoot a freaking elk, you'll have a freezer full for sure.
Yeah, dude, I'll definitely give you some elk meat if I shoot one.
Yeah, you better.
Oh, yeah.
So what are you planning on doing kind of when your fire job is up then?
You know, I've been applying to a bunch of other jobs. I've been applying to a bunch of federal jobs and, you know, for fire, and then some other ones is like kind of like biologist type position. They call like biological science technician positions, and you pretty much do like biologist field work type stuff. And so I've been applying everywhere in the Midwest. I'm just hoping to get picked up somewhere, but that's kind of the plan. But you know, doing fire for 6 to 8 months, you know, I'm good financially for the winter time to be able to not work until next fire season.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't mind doing fire again, because it's, you know, you work really long days, but you can make a lot of money on fire assignments. And it's really cool to be able to get hunting season off, you know, during November and stuff. And it's definitely a cool gig for now, and just to see where it takes me. But
yeah, that's everyone's cool.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just kind of at that point in life. I don't know exactly what I want to do, and I'm 26, and I feel like whenever I look on social media, you know, I see people in my high school class, they're getting married or having kids or buying a dog. I just, you know, I'm just thinking about like when my next hunt's going to be and stuff. So I'm sure you feel the same way too. You get excited about your hunting trips and stuff. And,
oh, for sure.
Yeah, you got to go on that cool trout fishing trip.
Yeah. No, I know. After I get done with school, I've been planning hunting trips for when I graduate college since I was in high school. So I'm ready.
Do you have any?
What's that?
Do you have any hunting trip plans this year too? I know you're pretty busy with.
Yeah, no, not this year. You know, I just kind of medically retired from wrestling, so I'll be helping out and whatnot, the team and whatnot. But, you know, I'm going to focus on school with my last two semesters here, graduate, and hopefully try and find a job. And, yeah, I don't know, we'll see how next year goes. Hopefully I can get a few trips in. Financially wise, it'll be a little interesting, but.
Oh, yeah.
We'll make it happen.
I feel like life's a lot simpler, man, when you just work. Because, like, man, you know, college was a lot of fun, and I enjoyed college so much. But it's definitely, you know, when you're going through college, you're broke. You know, you're kind of just getting by, but. You know, it's important to get your education, but it just seems like you have a lot more downtime on your days off when you're just working, and then you get off, you're free. So it's, and then you know, you make more money and to spend money on toys and stuff.
Yeah. I'm excited to not have to do homework anymore.
Oh yeah.
Or take exams.
Oh man.
The days we used to walk out of class and say, "What would you get on that exam?" We don't have to do that anymore.
No, yeah, we don't. And then there was that one kid that says he's got a 99 when he got like a 65 or 70, just barely passing.
And he's over there. You know? Yeah, I got a 99. I didn't even study either.
Yeah, it's like, I'm going to stay up to like 2 a.m. studying to get a 70.
If that.
But, yeah.
Are you going to come to Wisconsin next spring and do some turkey hunting or no?
I want to. It was crushing me not being able to go to Wisconsin and turkey hunt last spring. 2 years before I went both years and turkey. I definitely sound biased, but I think hunting turkeys in Wisconsin is the best state I've ever hunted in. It's like, it's just loaded with turkeys. We had such a fun time chasing turkeys around and I just can't believe the volume of them there. And I really like how Wisconsin DNR sets up their seasons. Cause like, you know, you have all those different, you have like, you know, 7 turkey seasons, like the A, B, C, D. So when you're out there, you don't really see that many hunters, you know, which is nice. Like it kind of spreads out the harvest a little bit.
Yeah, we had a lot of opportunities. I mean, both years, you had a lot of opportunities.
Yeah.
A couple misses.
Man, it's just a good time, dude. Like, not even the turkey hunting. Like, we just, the camaraderie with, like, all your buddies and stuff. And, you know, we go over to Jared's and we're cooking. He's cooking just 5-star meals. And we're finding morales while we're turkey hunting. And I remember you found morale and you're like, all right, fuck the turkeys for now. We got to find morale.
Yeah.
And we found like 2 hatfuls. And
you had to call your mom and ask her if morale mushrooms were okay so I wasn't feeding you psychedelics.
That's not what happened. No, I sent a picture to my mom of the morales and she got nervous because she thought they were maybe like shrooms or something or poisonous onions. And like, and then she Googled morales and she's like, man, they're like $50 a pound or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, or whatever they sell them in, like they're expensive, but they're out there. Morales, that's, man, some people ask me, what do they taste like? I'm like, it tastes like a morale. It's got a unique taste.
They do. Like, they sure do.
It's weird. It doesn't really taste like a mushroom. It just tastes like a morale.
Yeah.
Like it's, I'm always looking for them. Like, since I met you, Andrews, you've definitely given me a bigger passion for the outdoors. Like, I didn't know what shed hunting was until I moved out here. Like, mm-hmm. No one shed hunts back home.
Yeah.
And, when you took me out shed hunting, that was the funnest thing. And I shed hunt on my free time, you know, out in the Dakotas. And it's, you know, it's always a blast. And, you go ahead, you good?
No, I was going to say, do you want to tell them about the time when you skipped shed hunting to go see one of your girlfriends?
Oh, yeah. my ex-girlfriend, I chose to go to her family farm that weekend to not go shed hunting, and we only dated for like a month, so it's totally, it's such a dumb decision.
I wish I just went.
Yeah.
I'm not going to let you live that one down.
Nope. I should have went. I should have went on shit, honey. It's all good. It happens, but I have an amazing girlfriend now, and she lets me go to Wisconsin and do the shed hunting and turkey hunting, so it's all good.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, you're going to have to, you'll have to come back if you can this spring. Mom and Dad will have a new house for you to stay in, and they can cook you goulash. And
yeah, the best goulash in Wisconsin.
Okay.
Yeah, then, you're...
One more story you got to tell. When you were driving into Prescott, I think it was.
Yeah.
When you got some beer.
Oh, yeah. Like, so that was the first time I've ever been in. No, I've been in Wisconsin before. I went to La Crosse, but that was like the first time ever like buying spotted cow before. And like people say how good spotted cow is, and it is. It's fucking good. I really like it. And the first time I bought it, you know, I went into the packy, and that's what we call a liquor store back home in Mass. We call it a packy. And I went in there, and I got like a, I think it was like a 24 rack of bottles of spotted cow, and I put it on the counter, and I'm like, I just had the biggest smile on my face, first time buying spotted cow, and I say this to the clerk, I'm like, this is what I came here for. And then the clerk just looks at me. He's like, that's what everybody fucking comes here for.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, he just looked at me like an idiot. And I'm like, welcome to Wisconsin.
And then you tell him shed hunting, you're shed hunting. And he's like, what the fuck is shed hunting?
Yeah. He just, I don't think that guy got out very much.
Yeah.
He was in a, yeah, I don't know. but it was a fun trip, man. I always love seeing your family and friends, and I always love when I walk into your place and your dad looks at me and he's like, "Who the fuck invited this guy?"
Yeah, no, he does that to everyone. His bark is a lot more than his bite.
Oh yeah, and he gives me the nickname Eddie Haskell because I'm always sucking up to the parents and stuff.
Yeah. No, it's a good time. We gotta do that again here this year or whatever. You gotta figure out your schedule, figure out your life, and get it out here.
I gotta figure it out, man. I think I do. No, well, I know what you mean.
No, yeah. You got anything else for us?
No. I think I'm good, man. But for you, what do you, like, this is, what episode is this for you?
I think it's 8. I think it's 8.
What do you kind of envision in the future podcast and stuff that maybe, like, your fans have brought up, like, what they want you to add? Is there anything you have new coming out soon?
You know, I don't know, really. I mean, some people have reached out and said, you know, you should have so-and-so. And I mean, right now, at this point, I'm down to kind of have anyone on here. It's fun to just even have, you know, your friends on here to bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a good time. But eventually, you know, have whoever, you know, if I could get some, you know, I'd love to, like, talk with some of the hunting public guys or, you know, some of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just to hear what a day in the life is of someone who does that for a living right now and does it successfully. But otherwise, mm-hmm. really, I mean, for this podcast, I mean, there's no direction. If you talk to my parents or my girlfriend or anyone that knows me, I fly by the seat of my pants. I went to Best Buy one day and spent a couple dollars on my setup here. And I was like, I'm doing it. I don't give a shit. Like, I want to do a podcast. Yeah. This is what I've always wanted to do. So I did that. And next thing you know, I figured out kind of on my own how to do this. Still don't really know what I'm doing.
Sure.
And,
yeah
I don't know. The endless possibilities for what we can do here.
Oh, man. Now, I really envy you for doing this because it takes a lot for someone to just put themselves out there and just go with it. And I think this is going to be a great podcast. It already is a great podcast, but I just think you're going to just take it and run with it and do amazing things. So I'm excited for future podcasts. So
I'd like to, you know, some of the guys that we went to school with out in South Dakota, even I see some of their Snapchat stories and I'm like, I'd love to have some of those guys on here. You know, that Dylan Stein and, couple of those guys. Whatever.
Oh, yeah.
We'll have to talk to them.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely Willie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I messaged Willie. I gotta, we should talk sometime. I'd like to come out there and see those guys too and bring us out here and go on a hunting trip, whatever. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, we'll get something planned out and we're not overly far away.
No.
It's not, it's the state over, so it's for sure. Not too bad.
Just a quick 10-hour drive.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So.
No, that's it, man. I mean, I guess you're kind of done in North Dakota. Otherwise, good luck kind of the rest of the season.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Andrews. Thank you so much for having me on here.
Yeah, no problem. It was fun bullshitting with you. This is just another nightly conversation for us, I guess.
Yeah, you know, there's no different, that's for sure.
So.
Just recorded.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, you have a good night.
All right. Yeah, you too, boss.
We'll see you later.
Yep, bye.
All right, guys, thank you all for listening to this episode of the Rush Valley Podcast. Please follow us on the social media. Again, I can't thank you guys that listen to the podcast enough. The feedback from everyone, it means a lot, hearing stories from people that listen to it. Send me Snapchat messages on Facebook or Instagram. It truly does mean a lot. So, if you guys have requests for people that you want on here, give me a shout. I'll have anyone on here. I don't give a shit. Otherwise, make sure you tune into the Valley, baby.